Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, what is up, everybody, and welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast. I'm your host, Josh, and I am all alone today. Not really. I'm never alone in here. I've got my buddies, Ian and Janelle, over here.
Also, you didn't say the episode name, and people are going to be unhappy about that one.
It is episode number 354.
There you go.
And we got a wild one for you today. A lot of psychedelics. Some science, a disappearance, actually a couple disappearances, a cult tie-in, the CIA, basically everything trippy you can think of happens in today's story, because we're covering the disappearance of Mexican scientist Jacobo Greenberg. And this is a really interesting story. I'm trying to remember how I even came across it. My internet history is very weird. I go down some weird rabbit holes, man. I just come across some weird stories, and you know, this whole topic is like right in my wheelhouse, and I love a lot of the things that Mr. Greenberg proposes about reality. About, does our mind create reality? Is it a holographic simulation? Do we live in the Matrix? Can we break free of the Matrix? Can we control our reality? Can psychedelics give us insight into the other realm that exists? I mean, we're going to be talking about psychic abilities, psychic surgery, which is a whole other wild thing that's been going on. Shamanism is a big component of this. But anyways, we got a very interesting episode for you, despite my partner, my love, being gone today. She is recording for her show, actually. Had a little bit of some scheduling switch arounds here this week, so she'll be back next week. But you've got me and the rest of the gang here for this one. But let's just go ahead and get into things, because it's insane, man. And so bear with us. It's a little bit hard to follow, but we're going to do our best to break it down as simply as possible for you. But really, I think Jacobo Greenberg is like the Mexican Nikola Tesla. I think he's on a similar wavelength as Nikola Tesla, somebody who the mainstream scientific community laughed at. Said, what are you doing? What are you talking about? This is insane. You're out of your mind. And then years later, you're like, oh, wait a minute. This is actually pretty interesting. All of this research that he did. Before I start, though, one quick announcement real quick. Merch right now is at the biggest discount you will ever see. 50% off everything at milehighmerch.com. Reason being, we are moving distributors and we have some decent inventory on a lot of things. So we're trying to obviously get rid of a lot of it. So our loss is your gain. And again, 100% of profits on all merch across all shows goes to the Higher Hope Foundation. So not only are you supporting a great cause, but you're also getting merch at a price you will never see again. And there's lots of merch still there for Mile Higher, as well as the other shows at Mile Higher Media. So go check it out, milehighmerch.com. All right, let's go. So Mr. Jacobo Greenberg Zilberbaum, he was born in Mexico City on December 12th, 1946. And at this time in history, Mexico City was going through lots of changes, intense modernization of the city, and really the whole country of Mexico was seeing serious growth and development. The president at the time, Lázaro Cárdenas, had just finished his six-year term and was known as a strong leader who championed the working class and acknowledged the predicament of Mexico's indigenous population, something that would heavily influence Jacobo's career later on. Jacobo's family were Yiddish-speaking Jews who had immigrated from Poland in the early 20th century. As some of them were Orthodox, they had fled the region to escape Russian pogroms that targeted Jewish people living in the Pale of Settlement, which is a small portion of Western Russia where they were allowed temporary residency. We don't know that much about Jacobo's father or the relationship, but we do know that his mother had a very significant part in his early life. We also know that his parents were first cousins, which actually worried the extended family when the couple announced that they were getting married, for obvious reasons, right? However, Jacobo's mother was diagnosed with a brain tumor in 1956 and died from a stroke 2 years later. Jacobo was only 12 at the time, but still he was the oldest of three brothers and had to take up more responsibilities within the family. During this period, Jacobo decided that one day he would study the brain to prevent his mother's fate from happening to others, which I love that. He's inspired by his, you know, such a tragic moment in his life that he's going to figure out maybe there's a way that we can stop this from happening altogether. And this wouldn't be the only lasting impact of his mother's death. According to Jacobo's cousin, Hilda, his early dependence on his mother really affected his relationship with women for the rest of his life. Because typically, Jacobo would fall in love very quickly, and then the relationships ultimately wouldn't last very long. And in addition to that, Hilda remembered that after his mother's death, Jacobo became obsessed with otherworldly events and the supernatural. And she said that in most photographs taken of him after this time, he was pictured gazing upward or in a distracted state, almost like kind of in a trance-like state. Hilda said, quote, his attention was wandering and wondering. That's very interesting that such a pivotal moment in his life, you know, he loses his mother at a young age, that this sort of creates this interest in understanding like what the other side is and what happens after you die and really like what the nature of reality is. And I know somebody also said that he was obsessed with the human eye as a child, which I think is very interesting because I'm sure most of us out there have seen examples of the human eye next to a picture of like a galaxy. And it's very interesting that kind of all connected, right? When you actually look at the how beautiful a human eye looks and, you know, all of the retina and all the different circles and just the beauty of it. Draws comparisons to the stars and galaxy, which is pretty cool. In 1963, just before his 20th birthday, Jacobo met and fell in love with his first wife, Lizette Arditi. Lizette was also Jewish and just as interested in the supernatural as he was. So there you go, match made in heaven. During this time, he also met a British medium who practiced seances using a Ouija board to communicate with the dead. And while Jacobo was always interested in the supernatural, this was his first experience with it, and he was fascinated by it. While others around him saw it as just a silly board game, Jacobo thought seriously that the dead could be living in this state of limbo, and one day deciding to contact the living. And that really, the Ouija board was truly a talking board, that it was a bridge to the other side. It could be used as a communication device, not just a silly game that we all laugh about. But Lizette recalled how during the seance, the spirit advised Jacobo that his watch would stop precisely at 6 p.m. And according to her, his watch did in fact stop at that precise moment. And whether this was just a coincidence or proof of genuine spiritual contact, it really didn't matter because for Jacobo, the spirit had indeed materialized right before him. And after this moment, Jacobo wished to dedicate more of his study to earlier forms of mysticism in both his Jewish faith and Mexican culture. And it was also during this year that Jacobo became familiar with Kabbalistic thought. And although mysticism has always existed within Judaism, it hadn't been formalized until the 13th century with the writing of the Zohar. And I've heard of all these things before, but I did a little digging just because I want to understand a little bit more what these things are. So the Zohar is basically 12 volumes of literature, and it was written in the second century by a sage, and it's this is just very, very like in a nutshell descriptions of what this is, of course, but it kind of reads, it's commentary on the Torah, but it reads like a mystical novel. So talks about the Torah, but also it's like adventures of different people and different discoveries that they find. Sounds very interesting, but it does sound like it is a very long piece of work. And then the foundational text of Kabbalah, which was passed down by Moses from Mount Sinai, passed down through the centuries to medieval Kabbalists. So that's where that originates from. But in the 16th century, Isaac Luria founded a school of followers who explored meditative practices and concepts such as Zimzum, which is an idea that God self-contracted, which produced emanations of light seen by those in scripture, Shivra Hakalim, which was a shattering of divine vessels, and Gigul, or the reincarnation of the soul. And I, you know, apologize for not pronouncing those perfectly, but pretty tough to pronounce there. But Kabbalah is a form of Jewish mysticism, which is really a spiritual way of thinking that looks beneath the surface to understand the deeper meaning of life, the universe, and our connection to the divine. So if a regular religion is the what and how, Kabbalah is the why. Very interesting stuff. And Jacobo was inspired by these teachings of heavenly visions and accessing the throne of God through meditation, and would always try to access and integrate Kabbalah throughout his career. Hilda said that after her grandfather died, Jacobo requested all of his prayer books. Hilda said that Jacobo always kept them next to him and that, quote, they made him feel attached to his ancestry, which is understandable.
I just got a quick, have you guys like ever been introduced to Kabbalah or just kind of like that meditative practice?
No, I've heard it from a TV show, though. That's the only reason that it's sparking a memory of mine.
Well, I know Madonna was also super.
Oh, was she?
She was.
Oh. Okay, no.
But is it, I had a teacher in middle school named Ed Glassman.
Mm-hmm.
Good man. But he ran a meditation club. And even though he didn't specifically say, like, we're doing Kabbalah, we're doing Kabbalistic meditation, he brought in this one rabbi to lead us in this. And it was so entry level. It was just like a one-off situation. And it was just typical meditation, like mindfulness and all that. But it really is kind of the root of more or less like Western meditation, meditative practices of just like finding presence within that moment, trying to clear your head. And then it's through that presence, you can, you know, through Kabbalah, you can like access God. You can access these more divine elements.
Right, right. Yeah, it's super complex.
Super duper.
Yeah, there's a lot of literature around it that is, you know, there's obviously tons of experts out there that devote their whole lives to this. But it's very, very old too. It's been around since the dawn of time almost. I mean, talking second century. So very, very ancient mysticism here. So back to Jacobo. It's now 1964, and he enrolled at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, or UNAM, which is a public research university with several campuses in Mexico City. And at first, he studied psychology. But Hilda said a personality shift occurred as he fell into the 1960s counterculture movement. Because, yeah, baby, the 60s. We know, most of us know, you know, all the things that happened during the 60s, especially in the counterculture movement. But at this point, he left his first wife and he moved to New York City, where his views and studies became much, much more radical. And while he was in New York, Jacobo enrolled in a doctoral psychophysiology program held at the Brain Research Laboratory at NYU's Medical School. This was a precursor of neurometrics, which is the science of understanding electrical activity within the human brain, which this topic is far above our pay grade and probably intelligence level. But sounds like very, very interesting research. Understanding what the brain is doing, what the electrical activity could be attributed to, what causes it to spike, what doesn't, and what other abilities the brain has.
Well, I also think this is the turning point in researching Jacobo, because like obviously we're talking about all these, you know, various forms of mysticism. And typically when I know someone's famous for that, I grow very skeptical of it.
Sure.
But with this, it's like, no, he like literally studied the brain. There were reports that like he knew how to do certain things in the laboratory at a scientific level that many of his peers didn't. Like, he was technically a very good scientist.
Yeah, it's important to note too, especially as you go forward, that he wasn't just a wannabe scientist or pseudoscientist or something like that. He actually worked in NYU's medical school,
right,
doing serious research on the brain, which is really fascinating. So he wasn't, because there's a lot of people out there who just err on the side of the mysticism and, you know, ancient wisdom, and then say a lot of stuff, oftentimes stuff that sounds crazy to most of us. And we're like, yeah, whatever. Like, we're not going to take you seriously. But here's a guy who not only did that, but also went to the one of the most prestigious schools and actually did the research and, you know, on a very, very high level of scientific, you know, he knew how to use the scientific method, right? Very well.
True that.
Very well. I am super stoked to tell you about one of our sponsors today, Function Health. And maybe, you know, been scrolling social media like I have, and you maybe have come across a Function Health ad before. And I actually did, and I started looking into their services before they actually sponsored the podcast. But I am really excited to be partnered up with them, because Function Health is a health platform that is revolutionizing the types of information you get access to. A lot of this info you would never otherwise see without using Function Health. So what is Function? Function is what happens when healthcare catches up. The first health membership that gives you access to 100 plus biomarkers across the whole body. We're talking hormones, metabolism, inflammation, heart, liver, hormones, and so much more. Plus you can add MRIs and CT scans as well. You get medical grade insights that are tracked over time, explained in plain language that all of us can understand. Function can help you stop guessing with advanced tests like T3 free, T4 free, TGBAB antibodies, and TPO antibodies, which is how well your thyroid's actually working and not just in range. Ferritin, which is essential for oxygen transport and cellular energy production. You can test your vitamin deficiencies, see, you know, how much of various different types of vitamins you have in your body, which are all very important to supporting musculoskeletal strength and immune resilience, amongst many others. There's leptin and insulin. I mean, there's just a slew of different tests that you can do. There's a lot that are included, and then there's a lot that you can add on additionally, including a cancer screening, amongst a million other tests. It's really the most comprehensive healthcare testing that you can do out there. If you've been to the doctor for a regular checkup, you know they usually take blood, but they're only going to test for a few things, or just do a blood panel. They're not going to test for all these other things in more of a preventative type of measure. So I'm super stoked. I've got my Function Health account created. I actually just gave my blood this past week, and I'm anxiously awaiting the results, because I'm going to get more information that I've ever gotten before from my own doctors. What's really great about Function is that they make it super, super easy. Once you get an account with them, it's so easy to schedule your blood draws. It's the most convenient process ever to find places locally that you can get your blood drawn. And then they do the rest. Everything's done within their portal. It is really, I mean, it's technology at work is really what they're doing. Lots of innovation here. So if you're interested in Function, learn more and join using our link. The first 1,000 get a $100 credit toward their membership. Visit www.functionhealth.com/milehigher or use gift code milehigher100 at sign up to own your health. So there, he's focusing on a lot of different things. Some of them include the effects of stimuli, such as geometric shapes and colors, on the electricity within a subject's brain. And while the research was serious and he learned invaluable skills related to wavelengths within the brain, he felt like this purely academic study didn't account for the alternative ways of knowing he had been exposed to when he was a child, which is very interesting. So he goes and he's doing all this scientific research, but he's like, he's still left feeling a bit empty. And he's like, I'm still not getting the answers that I'm looking for, the explanations for what's actually going on here. And really not getting the answers from science in relation to what is our brain's connection to the divine? How are we accessing the divine? What does that look like? And so he's like, I think we might need to venture outside of the laboratory a little bit to hopefully find some more answers. So in 1977, Jacobo returned to Mexico City, began teaching at his alma mater, UNAM, and here he dedicated a portion of his time to researching memory, visual perception, and physiological psychology. And one of Jacobo's earliest paranormal experiments attempted to prove a theory that children could communicate through means other than language, like sight or sound. He said he could make children read words off a page without looking at them. Wow. Reading without looking.
Show me the experiment. So how did you do this?
I'm assuming the kids got the book, eyes closed in front of the book, and they're still able to see.
Right.
So it's like they're using their mind's eye or something like that, their third eye.
And you know, you hear this often about children, about how they...
Psychic abilities are strong,
right,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
They have more access to it. And of course, again, whenever I hear someone say that, I'm like, I get kind of skeptical. However, again, he's looking at it in terms of a scientific way of like, how can I go on to prove this? And according to him, he said he could, although, you know, I couldn't find the actual like experimentation documents from this specific event, but still, many of his peers did look at his work after this.
Yeah. Well, and one of the side effects too was that some of the children began to claim they were seeing the spirits of dead people, which obviously kids are very impressionable, right? So you wonder how this experiment was conducted. What was he actually saying to them? Because if you tell a kid something, a lot of kids will just parrot it back to you. And I know this firsthand because I have a toddler. I'll tell her something, she'll literally repeat it back to me. And then but the way that it comes out of her mouth is like, she said it first, you know?
But she came up with it.
She came up with it. Right. Exactly. It was the original thought of hers, but she clearly just parroted me. So it makes me wonder if he was talking about, all right, if you happen to see spirits, if you happen to see your loved ones that have passed, don't be alarmed. That's part of it. And that, then they're like, eyes closed. They see, you know, whatever a kid sees. They're like, oh my God, I saw my dead loved ones. But I don't know. Maybe they did. It's very interesting. But because of this, as you can imagine, a lot of parents are like, nah, this isn't just a scientific experiment here. What's going on? I don't want my kids, you know, seeing dead people. So they pulled them from Jacobo's experiments, and this kind of made him feel distressed and understandable, right? Like, why are people weirded out by this? What's going on? You know, angry parents, not fun to deal with. In addition, some of his colleagues, including the founder of NYU's Brain Lab, Eroy John, doubted his findings. John said, quote, the kinds of tests to which such data should be subjected are well known. He certainly knew what those tests were and never applied. I don't think he had a dishonest bone in his body, but he certainly had a lot of wishful thinking.
I like that he said he's not a liar, though.
Yeah.
You know, he's like,
wishful thinking.
Right. That's different.
He's like, I see what he was trying to do, but he didn't execute quite the way that probably should have. He did have some defenders of his work out there, such as physicist Amit Goswami and skeptical approval from Carl Priebram, one of the deans of American neuroscience. And he said, if it's true what he was finding, it could be very, very important. But I think that his work needs a lot of confirmation and testing in other laboratories. It's a scientist answer right there. Still, in his early part of his career, Jacobo was restless. He had the rational mind of a serious scientist, but he believed that a reason could be preventing him from more advanced study of human consciousness. It was then that he began to explore indigenous shamanism, and he continued to study Kabbalistic texts like the Zohar, which he felt drawn to, quote, like wood to fire. Due to his mood swings and critiques from the larger scientific community, he began to consult shaman healers known as curanderos. And still, amidst it all, his students loved him. If I was a student, I'd love him too. He sounds awesome. I'd love to just get high and talk to him. I'm sure we'd have some interesting conversations. And he easily even received some federal funding through grants. But still, his colleagues were very confused by his work. For one, he refused to let others corroborate his findings and didn't allow students in his labs to speak to others about their work, which obviously the whole scientific community is all about peer review, you know, getting second set of eyes on things, you know, let's test, 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 test. So when somebody's kind of being protective over their work, people start raising eyebrows, right? They're like, what's going on over there? Why is he protecting his work if it's so legit, right? As Jacobo continued his scientific quest, he became more interested in Mexican shamans' connections between the earthly and the divine, the spiritual world, and he became convinced that the mind was trapped within the human body, which is kind of true. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
we all get trapped in our mind, in our body. I think that's a very true statement. So he's like, all right, well, let me set out to figure out how do we liberate our mind from our body. And, you know, there's a lot of different methods out there that people have tried and have been using for a long time, including meditation, hypnosis, and of course, hallucinations. And hallucinations through substances, right? Through this, he completed his largest work yet, The Shamans of Mexico, which is a 6-volume account of different psychic healers and spiritual leaders throughout his country. Like, this is a serious 6 volumes, too. This is like nice, thick books. And while the book is critiqued for its confused rambles, constant misspellings, and lack of footnotes, it was one of the most detailed studies on indigenous and spiritual practices within Mexico. And the firsthand experiences he witnessed began to make him famous throughout the country. He not only participated in these practices, but also led groups alongside established curanderos and began regularly taking magic mushrooms and other psychedelic substances as part of these various rituals. So in 1975, Jacobo was invited to Los Pinos, the central government building in Mexico City, where the president and administration worked. And it was here that Jacobo met with Margarita López Portillo, the sister of President José López Portillo, who was a deep supporter of indigenous rights and culture. Margarita wanted to get to know Jacobo after she read The Shamans of Mexico, and more importantly, wanted him to meet somebody she thought could inform his research. So she introduced him to curandera named Barbara Guerrero, who is now a spiritual healer using the name Donna Pachita. Miss Pachita was a cabaret singer and lottery ticket seller who had actually fought alongside Pancho Villa during the Mexican Revolution. When Jacobo met Pachita, he was instantly just intrigued. I mean, he was completely into what she was doing and soon began describing her as his mentor. The entire 3rd volume of The Shamans of Mexico was devoted to Pachita and her work. Pachita told Jacobo that she was the niece of Montezuma and the sister of Cuauhtémoc, who was the last of the Aztec emperors. Jacobo wrote that Pachita was, quote, capable of materializing and dematerializing objects, organs, and tissue by means of manipulation of organic structures. That's wild. Which means that she could pull a heart, a human heart, out of thin air and then perform surgery without making an incision. Does that sound possible to you?
He goes on to explain his scientific theory behind this later on. However, I've brought this up to you guys and we mention it later on, but it definitely, like, this whole idea of psychic surgery has also been used by scam artists, like John of God was the most famous one. Because there is, like, this really strong, if you're already kind of buying into this whole thing in the first place, regardless of if they do anything, you're buying into the strong placebo effect by the end of it. So people do swear by it. There are, and you know, it's not just this, it's not just scammers doing it. Like, there are well-known indigenous healers who do believe in the practice of psychic healing. I don't know. I still am quite skeptical.
With mixed results. Mixed results. To say the least.
Yes, yeah. Certainly.
So Pachita diagnosed and healed people without being physically present. And according to Jacobo, she did this with colossal power and accuracy. I think another person that comes to mind too, I know there's a number of gurus out there who claim to have psychic healing powers like this. And I want to say Edgar Cayce, the Sleeping Prophet, was another one. Who could remotely heal somebody psychically. My grandfather, I think I might have told this before on the show, but my grandfather told me a story about how I believe it was like back in the days of Edgar Cayce, but he actually like prayed to Edgar Cayce, and he claims that Edgar Cayce located a rotting tooth in his mouth that nobody had been able to find before, and it saved him from like having a serious infection. And that he psychically did it, which actually my grandfather, rest in peace, he went to the Psychic Institute.
Where's that?
It was here in, I believe it was here in Colorado at one point, and like back in the day. And I remember in his basement finding the certificate from the Psychic Institute. I was like, damn, that's cool.
Did you ever try and like...
Yeah, I asked him about it, and he forgot about a lot of it.
Oh.
Because I think this was back when he was in his like 40s, 50s, maybe when he did it.
Was Edgar Cayce still alive at that point?
I think at the time when he graduated from the Psychic Institute, he was.
Okay.
Because, yeah, Edgar Cayce died in, or no, he died a long time ago. So, no, he wasn't still alive.
But, you know, he's still wandering the halls of the Akashic Records, so he's...
Yeah, exactly. I think it was something like that. Yeah, because 1945 is when Edgar Cayce died. So my grandfather was obviously not. I think he was born a few years before that, maybe. And this happened way later in his life. So must have been something like that. But a believer in psychic healing, nevertheless. Very interesting.
There's like, you know, for instance, the thing that comes to my mind is like Reiki healing and energy healing that a lot of people... Mm-hmm. You know, used in this day and age, and I think is much more accepted as legit. Obviously, there's still a lot of people who are skeptical of it, but I've always thought that was really interesting, and people swear by it. And you can, like, obviously go into Reiki specialists, but then there's people who claim that they can do it remote, so who knows?
You know, and I think that's, like, the big difference between a lot of, you know, indigenous or Eastern healing, like psychic healing, is... Mm-hmm. As opposed to this psychic surgery, is that mm-hmm. like psychic surgery proposes that physically,
right?
Like you,
you have a failing heart, we'll
give you a new heart, like out
heart
of nowhere.
Heart transplant that we manifest ourselves,
right?
Right.
We're not actually going and finding another physical heart, you know, that's been donated from somebody.
Right.
But Cheetah has the ability to just psychically pull it from the ether,
right?
And then perform the surgery without ever making, like, that's just wild to think about. So she can go on and remove the failing organ, replace it with the good one, all without, I mean, God, what a world would that be if that was a scientifically proven method of surgery. I mean, a lot of lives would be saved. But according to journalist Sam Quiñones, Jacobo's experiences with Pachita also influenced his scientific thinking. Greenberg came to believe that the neuronal field he had postulated with what he called an informational matrix, a complicated concept that his students still have trouble explaining. He believed that experience and perception were created as a result of this interaction and that the curative powers of shamans and curanderas like Pachita came from their ability to access this informational matrix and change it, thereby affecting reality. Big thanks to Pretty Litter that's tracking a different family member's health. Your cats. Cats are part of the family. I've got three of them. Love them dearly. They've been with me for over 10 years now. And, you know, they're hitting that retirement age. You know, they're really starting to, I don't know. They're not slowing down. That's for sure. In fact, I feel like sometimes they have more energy than they did 5-10 years ago. And what I am concerned with is that obviously as they get older, health problems start popping up. Kidney issues is a big thing with cats. And luckily, you know, I have more peace of mind when it comes to tracking my cat's health thanks to Pretty Litter, because Pretty Litter is the only litter that changes colors and detects blood in the urine. So you can actually see when there's blood in your cat's urine, which signifies a health problem. And obviously it's time to take your cat to the vet. Because what it's actually doing is it's detecting abnormalities in your cat's urine by testing acidity and alkalinity levels, as well as the visible presence of blood. Pretty Litter is crystal litter, so it is a lot easier to clean. It does a better job at masking odors. It's a lot lighter than clay litter, and you know, you don't have all that dust coming up that you do with clay litter. You know, and you're scooping the box and you just got like a cloud. You're like wiping your face off with a towel, all the like cat poop dust off your face. It's just not fun. You know, I've been there, done that, and those days are over thanks to Pretty Litter. Plus, it ships for free right to your door, so there's no heavy bags to carry and no last minute pet store runs. It's formulated with silica gel crystals that are safe for cats and people. Like, this was formulated with veterinarians, so this is 100% safe for your cats. The ultra absorbent formula uses less material than clay litter, which reduces waste and ultimately saves you money. It's ideal for apartments, people with busy lifestyles. You know, you don't have as much time to change the cat litter, or multi-cat households like mine. So right now, save 20% on your first order and get a free cat toy at prettylitter.com/milehigher. You win, your cat wins. That's prettylitter.com/milehigher to save 20% on your first order and get a free cat toy. prettylitter.com/milehigher. Pretty Litter cannot detect every feline health issue or prevent or diagnose diseases. A diagnosis can only come from a licensed veterinarian. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. So in layman's terms, they're so tapped in with the divine and the fabric of all reality and existence that they can manipulate it for their own specific reasons. They're just linked up, man.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty sick.
I mean, it's not so far off from like the like law of attraction stuff, like, you know, yeah. Like The Secret, you know, you can manifest, you can change reality by manifesting it.
Right.
Like, that's it at its most baby level. This is just like 10 steps further where it's like you can manifest a heart if you're really.
If I just think really hard, I can get a new heart.
Right.
And one will manifest. But then you need somebody who can actually put it in you. Yeah. It's very interesting to think about, because I think a lot of us believe in manifestation to some extent, our own version of it, and everybody's got a different sort of point of view on it. I'm a very strong believer in manifestation, although I'm not in the same way of like The Secret, or I think law of attraction to some extent is true. Like the way that I look at it is your life is a mirror. Life gives you not what you want, but it gives you who you are. So your life is a reflection of who you are inside. And that's ultimately what you get on the outside. And it's not necessarily about what you want. Because people are like, yeah, I just want a car. I just want this specific car. So I'm just going to ask the universe for it and I'm going to get it at some point. Maybe, but I don't know. Everybody's got their own flavor of manifestation, I'm sure. Let me know what you believe when it comes to manifestation. What have you manifested in your life? But anyways,
thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Do you have any really specific examples you can think of?
I have so many examples. I could argue my life for the past 15 years has been due to manifestation, I would say, in some way, shape, or form, that I was thinking about and envisioning my life and seeing my life unfold before it happened. And it happened in a way that felt familiar to what I had already pictured at one point. And I think the thing about it, though, is it didn't happen in the way in necessarily the timing and the exact steps that I thought it would, but it ultimately happened the way that it was supposed to. And ultimately, I ended up getting what I wanted, but it wasn't necessarily the way that I thought it was going to happen in,
yeah.
Right? It just kind of, the universe works in mysterious ways, it doesn't always do it the way that you think it's going to happen. Like logically, you could be like, well, if I do X, Y, Z, I should get this,
right. But
it doesn't necessarily work out like that. You could do X, Y, Z, then be like, oh, damn, didn't happen. But then in a roundabout way, you end up getting to where you want to be,
yeah.
Or receive what you want to receive. And you're like, oh, I didn't see that coming,
mm-hmm.
But I see how it got there. I don't know. What about you guys? Do you feel like there's things in your life that you've manifested?
Yeah, I think for sure. And kind of similar to what you were saying, Josh, like big, like picture goals or just things that I wanted for my life that now have somehow, I've been led to them. And looking back, it's like, oh, I wouldn't have thought these were the steps I would have taken to get there, but I ultimately have, gotten there. And then there's also like some more like very specific things that I feel like I manifested. Like one thing that comes to my mind, which has always weirded me out to this day, is when you're graduating from my grad program, you have to take an exam to be able to be eligible to graduate. And so I manifested the exact score of my exam. And I went in, I was like, I'm going to get this score. And I was like doing it for a month straight. And then obviously like I studied as well, but it wasn't like a pass fail, like you get a specific score. So I went into the testing center, took the exam. They give you your score right away, and it was the exact score. And I will always be like, what are the fucking chances of that? It was so bizarre. And I remember calling John. I was like, I literally got the exact score that I told myself I was going to get. I've always thought that was really weird. But I'd say like overall.
Yeah, you manipulated reality.
Yeah.
You did. Right. You manipulated the matrix. And you took control.
Yeah.
What was the score?
The number was 76, but it wasn't like a percent. I don't remember like how they calculate it, but I remember like in order to qualify pass, you had to like your number had to be 65 or something. And I was like, no, I'm going to like, I wasn't like acing it by any means, but I remember I was like, I'm going to pass it well enough to the point where I'm like, oh, I like really got this. And yeah, the paper came out and it was a 76. And I remember being like, what the hell? It was so weird. But yeah, there's like other things that I for sure feel like I've manifested. Or just things that I'll think about, you know, when I'm trying to connect with the universe of like, I really want to feel this type of way, or I am looking for this type of like experience. And a lot of times I'm like, I don't really know what that means or like how I'll get there necessarily, but you know, it's my ultimate goal that I'll somehow come to this conclusion. And that more times than not, somehow you don't really even realize it's happening when you're in it until it's already happened. You look back and you're like, oh shit, you know, there was a part of me years ago that wished for this exact moment that I'm in right now, or this exact, you know, part of my life that I'm experiencing, or season of life that I'm experiencing right now. And yeah, it's weird, but it's cool. What about you?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I think I think in the larger, you know, like what you were saying, more or less, I do believe, like, you, not necessarily straight up law of attraction, but what how you are on the inside, kind of, you are a mirror. You reflect and you get what you're putting out. I do believe that, because I can definitely say I've gotten my karmic comeuppance. But I also think that...
good and bad, right?
Yeah. Definitely good and bad. But I also think that a problem that I specifically fall into when it comes to the manifesting, or like, you know, manipulating the matrix, whatever you want to call it, is what a lot of people in the West, a lot of white people fall into, the issue of like wishing specifically for relationship stuff. Like, that's kind of what I, you know, the secret... for me, at least, or for a lot of people, I think it kind of became this nexus of just like, this is how I'm going to attract a relationship. Where it's like, you know, I look at dudes like Akobo, and it's like, he's not just like, he's focusing on Pachita because she has these, you know, claimed amazing abilities, but he's looking at more or less the full scope of spirituality, of existence, as opposed to, you know, like, oh, I really want a girlfriend, you know, which is what, how I end up, misusing manifestation. So I think,
yeah, what do you, it'd be interesting to understand, like, what are you manifesting in a partner? Like, what are right. the things that you're manifesting, and are those things, how deep do those things go? You know, are they surface level, or are they skin level, or they go to the soul? Because I think to find your soulmate, you got to go to the soul.
Right.
You have to start at the soul to really know whether or not you're with the right person. And I truly, truly believe that. And then that was my own personal experience. But it's interesting, because there's literally, I'll tell Kendall sometimes, I'll be like, I tell her all the time, I'm like, you create your own reality. Like, you create, your reality is what you put out there. And if you're constantly telling yourself negative things, or, you know, fears and anxieties coming in, and obviously I understand, especially being married to somebody who has an anxiety disorder, that it's a very complicated thing, and it's not something that's just like you can flip a switch on, right? It's always there, and it's always looming. And so her brain works different from my brain. I don't have those things. And so sometimes I think I'll tell her things, be like, you can alter your reality, just stop thinking about that, and then the problem goes away. And then, you know, and stuff like that. And that's not always helpful to somebody who is like, dude, I can't just like turn that off. It's always there. And so what are you talking about? And she gets annoyed with me sometimes. But I think on like there's a lot of things that I've told her, just around the way that you approach life, and thinking that, especially the life is a mirror thing, is, I think, is really a valuable tool. Because when you remind yourself of that, and you start looking at the world around you and the interactions that you're having with people, you start realizing like, oh, okay, is, you know, I need to look inward before I look outward to change my experience. But yeah, anyways, I go on and on about this topic, but Akobo is in, you know, he could be here hanging out,
right?
And he'd be interested in this conversation, because I think he was very enthralled in this whole idea of like, well, can we go beyond, through meditation, through shamanism and rituals, even elements of witchcraft. I mean, looking at all of these alternative ways of affecting human consciousness, and like, what are we actually tapping into? And that's a question I ask myself all the time, and through my psychedelic experiences, I feel personally like I have made connections with the divine. I truly think that, and this is coming from somebody who is super religious for the first half of my life, and I thought I was connected to the divine at that point. And when I look back and compare my experiences, you know, the experiences that I had, not only with the help of psychedelics, but and meditation and some of these other things, but they transcended all experiences I had prior in religion in a lot of ways. Things became much more simpler and much more easier to understand. And I felt more spiritually connected to the world around me, to the universe, to nature, especially, because I think there's magic in everything. And that's really Jacobo's big thing, is he believed in magic. That magic is not Harry Potter with a little wand, Expecto Patronum, all right? It's not that. Magic is all around us. The life blood of the universe is magic, and everything around us is divine. Everything is magic. And so then this other idea of a simulated reality kind of placed on top of that, that this energy, this magic's all flowing through that you can manipulate with your mind, is a whole other thing that's very interesting. But let's get back to Jacobo's work here for a moment, okay? Because he took a very anti-colonial approach. He wrote in The Shamans of Mexico that contemporary Mexican society had become reliant on Western powers as a consequence of the brutal colonialism it endured for nearly 500 years. However, he believed that he could find their power and challenge post-colonial norms by embracing indigenous practices of spiritualism and mysticism that have been practiced long before contact with Europeans. And I couldn't agree with him more. I think and this is something that's shared by another person I look up to quite a bit, is Graham Hancock, who we had on the show. We have a great whole episode.
Two
episodes, but one talking about kind of a lot of the shamanism and spirituality and all that good stuff. But colonialism has really destroyed the planet in so many different ways. And most of all, it severed us from our connection to spirit. And we have become completely disconnected to spirit. And that is a large reason for why we have a lot of the problems that we have in society today, why we are so divided, why we are so angry, confused, because we are not connected with the divine. And these indigenous cultures understood that. They practiced that since the dawn of time. There's a reason for it. It wasn't just a bunch of nonsense. It was very real. And I think it really helped get us to where we are today. And then we just got to where we are today and we're like, fuck it. We don't need spiritualism. We just need money. It's all about money, 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 and control and power. And everything got fucked up from there, obviously. So I totally relate with him on this. I think this is a very, very interesting point. I think if we brought back mysticism, we brought back practices and rituals that have been done for thousands of years and took that seriously, I think we would gain a lot. Following Jacobo's third volume on Pachita, she became famous internationally, with celebrity patients from around the world visiting her at Cuernavaca. At the age of 54, jazz musician Charles Mingus went to see her after he had been diagnosed with ALS, forcing him to put down the double bass for good. Charles' third wife, Sue Graham, wrote about the operation and said that it was performed in a dark room that smelled of alcohol. Charles lay face down while Pachita walked in with a kitchen knife and began the operation to remove one of his kidneys. And after it was over, Charles said he felt like Christ when he was lanced, and that Pachita, quote, knows how to cut just between the pores, from God to Pachita. However, Sue was skeptical of the whole thing and looked underneath Charles' bandage after he fell asleep, and there was no cut and no blood. However, she never told Charles, and instead she kept changing his bandages, and he felt renewed, believing that Pachita had removed one of his kidneys. And since Charles' spirits improved, she wondered, was that really her magic? Could disease be cured through personal will? However, sadly, on January 5th, 1979, Charles Mingus died of a heart attack triggered by ALS, only a few months after he visited Pachita. While Jacobo always believed Pachita had supernatural powers, and others online have commented on the successes of psychic surgery, it has been utilized, as Ian mentioned earlier, by scammers like John of God ever since it found popularity in the 1970s. And it's unfortunate. But I mean, it makes sense. If people see an opportunity to exploit people, you know, for money, usually, they will. Following his book on Pachita, Jacobo began spending time with another major Mexican shaman, a woman named Maria Sabina. Maria was an indigenous Mazatec woman who performed rituals using mushrooms. One night while at her home, Jacobo took some mushrooms and intended to write down his experiences on the substance. However, his hallucinations soon became too much for him to record any scientific thought. Must have had a pretty decent dose there. When you can't even write down your experiences, or sometimes it can leave you speechless. Like, you literally can't talk because there's so much going on in your mind that you lose the ability to communicate. But near him, Maria kept chanting, "San Pablo, San Pablo," which could possibly refer to a region in Oaxaca. And at first, Jacobo was cold, agitated, and uncomfortable. He imagined that he had left Maria's side and began wandering down strange, twisting streets. He was on a road in a panic before he imagined himself in the comfort of his living room, reading on the sofa. When he returned to Maria's side, the hallucinations stopped, and he wrote of this experience in one of his volumes, thanking Maria. He said, "For having shown me one of my emotional refuges, my incapacity to live in the present, and my tendency to escape reality to seek shelter and structure of comfort." One scientific result of these shamanic experiences was an experiment that Jacobo performed in 1987. So in this experiment, two participants were placed in the same room with electrodes attached to their heads, and then he asked the two to engage in telepathic communication, noticing the parts of the brain that were activated during this, you know, quote-unquote conversation that happened. After the two participants were isolated from one another, one was simulated with lights, sounds, and flashes, while the other was left alone. And according to the results, Jacobo noticed a simultaneous reaction in the brainwaves of the other participant. He called this phenomenon transferred potential. Wow, that's... There were simultaneous reactions in the brain.
Right. And there's this... like Jane Goodall, she did this...
With the chimps?
Well, with the chimps, but she did this specific one on a parrot my mom knew named Nikisi, who like claimed to have psychic capabilities. But they basically did the same experiment where other people were put in a room. Amy, her owner, was put in a room and was shown a series of images. And then Nikisi from the other room spoke those images out loud without seeing them. And so this transferred potential of, like, you know, being linked to someone telepathically and then, you know, monitoring the brainwaves, or in this case, what the parrot was saying, is kind of a strange, but it's, you know, this experiment has been done multiple times since then. I can't comment on the scientific efficacy, but it is really interesting.
We've all had telepathic moments, haven't we?
Right.
Have you had a telepathic moment with somebody?
Sometimes saying the exact same, you know, you finish each other's sandwiches style, like,
yeah.
Anil and I have it like every fucking day. We're like, I'll walk into a room and we'll say the exact same thing. I think our brains are just wired to be annoying brain rot together. But yes,
her and I do that all the fucking time. It's like we have literally the same thoughts at times. So it's interesting because it's like, what is that? What's going on there?
Or like twins, especially identical twins, always swear that,
yeah,
they have that.
I feel like our animals sometimes telepathically communicate.
Oh, 100%.
Right?
Well, like that was the thing with this bird.
Yeah,
Nikisi,
exactly. Right. Yeah.
There was another instance where Amy, the owner, had found out she had breast cancer. And Nikisi, after, so Amy came back, hadn't informed anyone yet. This was like directly after the doctor's appointment. And by the time Amy came back to their apartment, Nikisi had plucked out all of his chest feathers.
Oh, wow.
And said something like, we can heal together now. So it's like, it's strange, man. It's very strange.
Seems like a good thing to research.
Right? We should look into this.
Like, we should look into it. Because what if we were able to prove that telepathy is a real form of communication? Like, scientifically proven. And then we researched it enough that we knew how to get our skills up, you know, because there's all the obviously theories of if there are aliens out there, there are higher intelligent beings living in the universe, that what's the likelihood they're going to speak English or speak a language spoken here on Earth? Or are they going to speak to us telepathically?
What am I thinking right now?
Orange.
You're thinking, I need to get him a Diet Coke.
He's
thirsty.
No.
What were you thinking?
My toes are cold.
Ah, fuck.
That was my next thought. I'm cold. You got the blanket over there. But telepathic communication, I think that's a power we all would love to possess. Communicate with somebody without speaking. That'd be nice, honestly. Don't have to text anymore. Don't have to use your phone. Don't even have to speak words. Just like, and like to be able to do it from like far away too. Like not even have to be in the same room. You could be in two locations. I could send a message to Kendall right now.
Wouldn't that be kind of annoying? You're just like getting bombarded with people. I'd be like, shut up. I don't want to talk to you right now.
Be like Bruce Almighty.
Yeah, that's exactly.
When he takes over for God and just gets bombarded.
Yeah.
It probably would be overwhelming.
I think that's one of the reasons I like Jacobo's experiment, because it's always with pairs. It's with people who, you know, they establish this telepathic rapport first, and then it's like he attempts to measure the brainwaves afterwards. So it's not just this like constant bombardment of like a million thoughts at once. Yeah. It's just like you and this other person.
Stop right now and ask yourself, how many subscriptions am I paying for? And I'll bet you $100 that you don't know. Most of us don't know. I didn't know for a long time. And when I found out, I screamed. I literally let out a blood-curdling scream, because it was so many more than I had ever imagined. Because everything in this life is a subscription. Let's be honest. You turn on your TV, you're looking at 10 subscriptions right there. You're looking at your kitchen, a few more subscriptions there, your phone, like 100. So it adds up. And you know, they all cost money. My daughter's iPad is full of subscriptions, and it's a huge pain to keep track of. But Rocket Money has changed the game, not only for managing subscriptions, but just managing my personal finances. I love it. I use it every day. First 5 minutes I wake up, I'm on the toilet, I'm looking at Rocket Money. It gives me a shot of dopamine looking at it, because I see the money that I saved. It shows me refunds when they come back from Amazon. It shows me bills that are coming out. I get a complete picture of my finances. I got a nice clean list of the subscriptions. And then with a few taps, I can go and cancel some of those subscriptions I don't want to pay for anymore. You can upload a bill from maybe a utility bill, and then they'll actually go out and try to negotiate a lower rate for you. It's like magic, literally. Love Rocket Money. There's so many great things that they're doing over there. And if you do want the premium version, you get a lot more features there. You get asset management. You can add all of your investment accounts. You can see your net worth. You can do credit monitoring. You can get notifications. I mean, it is the premier way to manage your finances. It will save you money in the long run. I highly advise you start using Rocket Money, because it will pay for itself in so many different ways. And it'll just save you headaches and, you know, all that time you spend downloading statements, balancing your checkbook. Those days are over. Get yourself Rocket Money, because it is the personal finance app that helps find and cancel those unwanted subscriptions, monitors spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. That's what we're all trying to do. There's over 5 million members, including myself, have saved a total of $500 million in just canceled subscriptions, with members saving up to $740 a year when they use all the app's premium features. What a deal. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and reach your financial goals faster with Rocket Money. Go to rocketmoney.com/milehigher today. That's rocketmoney.com/milehigher. Rocket your money today at rocketmoney.com/milehigher. Well, he continued this experiment numerous times over the years, noticing that around a quarter of the participants possessed the transferred potential, and most were regular meditation practitioners. It was interesting. Makes sense. I feel like meditation definitely strengthens those abilities. Jacobo believed these results, quote, supported his theory of a neuronal field connecting all human minds, which would become the basis of his synergetic theory. Synergetic theory, not synergetic. Synergetic. I had to do a double take on that, because your good old Grammarly is like, what is this? This is spelled wrong.
I know, Grammarly kept hitting me with that the whole time. It's like,
hey, what is this? No, it's synergetic theory. So his theory proposes that all brains have access to the fundamental layer of reality, which contains all possible experiences and states of consciousness. And he links it to quantum field theory, where all potentialities exist until observed. Because according to Jacobo, the brain acts as sort of a receiver or tuner that interacts with this field before it collapses this field into a coherent reality, which is similar to how a radio can tune into specific frequencies on the air. Jacobo suggested that reality is a co-creation between the brain and the field, and that what we see as real is shaped by the brain's interaction with this universal consciousness. How about that? How about that, man? That's, I feel like I need to like just stop and think about all this for a while and like really wrap my head around this, because this is very interesting.
It feels like the better version of the smartest man in the world, Chris Langan's yeah. CTMU. You know, I think there's way more behind this one, but it does kind of hit my brain in a similar way of like, you are God. Mm-hmm. You create everything.
Minus the anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Yeah, the complete racism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad none of that's here.
No, Jacobo was good.
Yeah, he's a good man. Yeah. Good man.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
Jacobo attempted to explain the psychic phenomena he witnessed throughout his career by saying that the synergetic field connected all minds, and shamans could access this field through altered states of consciousness, allowing them to manipulate reality. So, to break this down in more simple terms that we can all understand, imagine your mind is like a TV. The TV screen shows pictures, your thoughts, senses, and emotions, but the signal that brings those pictures isn't in the TV, it comes from the outside, from an invisible place. Synergetic theory says that your brain is like that TV. It doesn't create the reality. It tunes into a bigger field of information that's already out there. So in this analogy, it's like a TV with bunny ear antennas. If you remember that, if you're old enough to remember Ian, you probably don't remember that.
Sorry,
huh?
Playboy. Nope.
I lived in a time where I had a little, the only TV I had in my living room for the first, I don't know, 12 years of my life was a little 13-inch TV from like the 80s. Had a dial tuner on it.
Wow.
12 channels. 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way around.
Tiny. You had one of those?
Yes.
Why?
My parents were anti-TV for a long time. They hated TV. So we had this tiny little 13-inch TV. Like basically the screen on my tablet right here. This is what we had in our living room, mind you. And then they had little wire antennas sticking off the top, because we didn't have cable, none of that. There's no streaming. There's not even hardly internet at this point. And so you turn on channel one and be like, and you'd have to like adjust the antenna just right so that you could bring in that signal, and then watch whatever the hell was on it.
PBS
was the only channel I could watch on there. Which is great. Lots of great TV on PBS.
Rest in peace.
But it's kind of that idea. It's like, it's out there. It's floating around in the invisible space. And then you just need to know how to tune in to pick it up.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, like he said, like linking it to quantum field of like,
right.
You know, Schrodinger's cat. You put the cat in the box with a bunch of poison. You don't know if the cat's dead or not unless you open the box. So within that state, in your head at least, the cat is both alive and dead. Both of those potentialities exist.
Right.
And then you tune in to whatever one when you pull up the box. So again, it's you know, we've come across theories like this before, but this one at least has some basis in accepted scientific theorem.
You know,
it's not
yeah.
just plucked from nowhere.
Right, right. It's not just like a personal spin on theology or something.
Right.
But the final aspect of this theory suggests that consciousness is not the property of the brain, but an aspect of the universe that is accessible and modifiable by human intentions and spiritual practices, which this is a shared theory amongst a lot of different spiritualists out there, I would say. But while this theory didn't get a lot of recognition from American scientists, because of course not, I mean, this is like pretty out there for the scientific community, it still brought up peers and colleagues in many Spanish-speaking countries as being on the brink of a truly remarkable discovery. However, he was still critiqued for skirting scientific norms to support his views of spirituality and mysticism further. So was Nikola Tesla, and Nikola Tesla could have changed everything had he not had he been supported. However, one American agency was interested in his work. Oh, just like Nikola Tesla. In 2023, the CIA, our lovely agency here, we love them, declassified three of Jacobo's papers related to synergetic theory. And while these papers were also publicly available, they were declassified as part of the Stargate Project, which, very interesting, I'm sure we've talked about on the show over the years, but it was a secret U.S. Army unit established in 1977 to investigate the military applications of psychic phenomena, especially remote viewing. Another interesting topic, because of course, the CIA would, if this is real, they want to know how to use it and manipulate it, and maybe they do. Maybe they figured it out now, and they're like, no one else will figure it out. While Jacobo had been primarily dedicated to studying the indigenous shamans of Mexico, he was also interested, as we remember from the beginning, in the spirituality associated with his Jewish faith. According to his cousin Hilda, Jacobo would fast on Yom Kippur, just like the rest of the observant members of their family. However, instead of attending a temple, he traveled around 30 miles to the ancient complex of Teotihuacan. According to the indigenous Nahuatl language, Teotihuacan translates to the birthplace of the gods and was built around 400 BCE and 300 CE. Its two largest structures, the Pyramid of the Moon and the Pyramid of the Sun, are still intact today. I got to go see these. I've been to Mexico a number of times, and I still have not gone and seen these. No, pyramids in Mexico. Stunning. So Jacobo, he'd go there every year and climb to the top of the Pyramid of the Sun and just sit there for hours and basically meditating, getting into a spiritual state. And he felt that on Yom Kippur, he said, he was in direct dialogue with the divine. And then he returned to Hilda's mother's house and break the fast alongside his family. However, while it seemed like Jacobo had been at the height of his career, both he and his country would undergo a reckoning in 1994. On New Year's Day, the same day NAFTA went into effect, the Zapatista Army of National Liberation stormed multiple locations in the southern Mexican state of Chiapas, demanding social, economic, and political rights for the indigenous populations throughout the country. The Zapatistas were worried that NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, would favor cheaper American exports like corn and threaten the livelihoods of local farmers who are mainly indigenous. Jacobo was a major supporter of the Zapatistas. He participated in marches in Mexico City, publicly signed letters of support, and connected the movement to his exploration of shamanism and the human brain. However, while Jacobo's support for the Zapatistas was firm, his grip on reality seemed to be loosening a bit, at least to the outside. And he had grown incredibly paranoid, often believing that he was being followed. He'd even sleep in his car to avoid his current wife. Her name was Maria Teresa Mendoza Lopez, who went by Ter. And not only that, it kind of seemed like over time his studies kind of evolved into science fiction, because at one point he started depicting himself as a space traveler who wandered through different galaxies using teleportation, describing different advanced civilizations that were invisible to the naked eye. Love that for him. That's very cool. This part of the story kind of reminds me a bit of Granger Taylor.
Right.
Another smart individual. Great episode, by the way. Left a note saying he boarded an alien spaceship and left Earth. But same kind of thing, you know, reality starts becoming a bit fuzzy. You know, there's a lot of reasons for that. But he described himself being surrounded by a supernatural kind of love that made him believe that he had become a deity, though he was, you know, still pretty unsettled about this. His family began to worry that his regular ingestion of hallucinogens had made his mind slip even further, which is fair, very fair. Because, I mean, we don't really even know how much he was doing. I mean, he could have been like, this is amazing. I want a cosmic voyage every day. And that's one thing with psychedelics. You don't want to take those every day, at least trippable doses where you're, you know, microdosing is one thing, but to go on a cosmic voyage every day, as fun as that sounds, very hard on the brain. Very, you're going to lose your grip with reality. This also coincided with Jacobo befriending a man named Carlos Castaneda. Now, Carlos, he's a Peruvian-born ethnographer, and he had risen to prominence following his 1968 book titled The Teachings of Don Juan Matus, who, according to Carlos, was a spiritual teacher who used peyote to guide him on his various vision quests. Jacobo and Ter first visited Carlos in 1991. At this point, Jacobo regarded Carlos as an accomplished anthropologist of the New Age generation. And according to some, during this visit, Carlos wanted Jacobo to leave his position at the university, UNAM, and join him and his followers on a compound in Los Angeles. Obviously know where this is going. A compound in Los Angeles. And there's a lot more information around that, which we'll get to in a bit. But Jacobo was more interested in his studies, and he didn't want to leave the country to join this strange U.S. group. So he said, yeah, no thanks, Carlos. You know, it's probably very, like, sus of, like, what's going on there. However, it only took 2 years for Jacobo to change his opinion on Carlos, because it was discovered that Carlos's entire claim to fame was knowing a spiritual leader named Don Juan Matus, and likely was just an invented fraud. And he didn't care about the indigenous practices Jacobo had dedicated his entire life to. Carlos visited Mexico City in 1993, and Jacobo frequently told his family that Carlos was an egomaniac, more interested in power than the truth. However, according to those close to Jacobo, his wife Tara was still a fan of Carlos and continued encouraging him to join Carlos's group in Los Angeles. So he's got pressure from his wife now. And again, Carlos and his whole belief system goes against Jacobo. So he's torn here, right? He's got to figure out what he's going to do. Jacobo's family become worried about his relationship with Tara. He had left voicemails with a sibling saying that Tara was persecuting him and that they had both become jealous and fought constantly. Jacobo's family believed that Tara was a physical threat as well to Jacobo, and he made that belief known. During his final visit to his brothers, Jacobo told him that he feared that he'd be murdered soon. Then on December 8th, 1994, Jacobo called his daughter Estucia, whom he had with his first wife, if you remember, Lizette, and he told her that he was going to Kathmandu on December 14th to participate in a series of group meditations with spiritualists from across the world. However, he said he'd be with the family for his birthday on December 12th. However, if Jacobo had a ticket to Nepal, the airline had no record of him using it or boarding the plane altogether. But his family had been used to Jacobo disappearing for a few days at a time without contact, and at first they didn't feel anything was wrong. I mean, goes on a cosmic voyage, you might not hear from him for a couple days. But what was really weird is that Jacobo never showed up for his birthday party on December 12th. And it was at that point they're like, he would have missed that. Why would he miss his birthday party? And that's when they realized he was truly missing. And no matter how often Jacobo had gone off the grid, he would never abandon his daughter, especially if he told her he'd be back in town for his birthday. What's more interesting were the actions of his wife, Tara, in the days following his disappearance. Following him going missing on December 8th, Tara cashed a check for $1,000 from Jacobo's book distributor. She told the guard at one of their houses in Morelos not to come back to work because Jacobo had flown to Guadalajara. But then she told Jacobo's stepmother that he was in the state of Campeche and that they planned to fly to Nepal together as a couple. Then Tara placed some phone calls across Mexico and the U.S. to a night watchman at a school and an unnamed man with a paramilitary group. Very suspicious, right? She was seen a couple times with an unknown blonde woman, and on December 29th, they visited the home she shared with Jacobo to pick up her dog, kitchen utensils, clothes, and a table. And then months later, Tara was seen on a beach in Tijuana. On Mother's Day 1995, Tara called her mom, and that would be the last time anyone spoke to her. So now Tara has gone missing, and we have no idea what the contents of that conversation with her mom was. All very, very strange, because now Maria Teresa Mendoza, just like her husband, Jacobo Greenberg, just gone. Forever. Literally never been heard or seen since. And that's really where their story ends. We really don't know anything else after that. And of course, especially due to Jacobo's work, there are lots of theories out there. Because how does it just end there? Like, how does this make any sense? What do you mean he just disappeared? Did he go to Nepal? Like, but there's no record he even made it on the plane. So where did he go? What happened to him? They're kind of all over the place. But obviously, whenever there's a CIA connection to anybody. We got to consider that. Maybe he did. Maybe the CIA got his work and they started taking a look at it. Whoever, you know, their scientists, whatever. Like, oh, whoa, shit. He's actually tapping into something that could potentially be damaging for the powers that be. So maybe they either had Jacobo killed so that they could try to cover up his work, discredit him, or maybe they gave him a government contract and he went to secretly work for them. There's one possibility. Obviously, zero proof. It's a fun one, right? To some extent. I don't think this is the case. I mean, they declassified his work and stuff like that. And I don't really see a motive for them to do that. Why would they do that? Especially if they just took his work, looked at it, declassified it.
Right. And I also think it would be one thing if the papers that they declassified weren't publicly available, but these were just, you know, his academic research papers that were like you could, if you had JSTOR, you could access them.
Right, right.
So it wasn't, it's more just proves the fact that at one point in time, the CIA looked at it. But as far as like actually taking any of the things he was saying and applying it or wanting him.
There's no evidence of that.
Right.
There's no evidence he figured out how to weaponize it. He figured out how to, you know, prove the existence of this matrix and how to, you know, access it freely and manipulate it. I mean, that'd be insane. And I feel like that would have never been declassified. We wouldn't even know about that. We probably never even know about him.
Right.
He would have just disappeared from the face of the earth, you know? So I don't really think that's the case. Another theory out there suggests that Jacobo just left his life. Maybe he realized he was in trouble. Maybe he realized that he was at risk of being murdered. And he just completely left his life behind and went to go live and work in a commune with shamans somewhere in rural Mexico. And one theory out there suggested that he possibly became a man named Shiva Shambo. However, this was easily proven to be false because Shiva Shambo was actually a man born as Jose Antonio Ramon Calderon, and his life had been pretty well documented, so that's not the case. And again, Jacobo loved his daughter, Astucia, and he wouldn't just up and leave her with no explanation whatsoever, especially if it was just to go live like a spiritual life somewhere. You know, like, why wouldn't you just tell your daughter at least, like, hey, you're not going to hear or see from me because I'm going to go live a spiritual life with other shamans somewhere? That one doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either. Plus, 1994 had been one of the best years of Jacobo's career. He had scanned the brainwaves of a shaman and brought the results to a conference in Germany where he was, quote, radiant by the response of his peers. His volume on Dona Pachita was about to be translated into English, and he had just received a federal grant to install more computers in his laboratory. Plus, his students loved him, and he was finding more support in the international community. So he's like really starting to get a lot of momentum going here. People are becoming more and more interested in his work. Not a whole lot of incentive to just like, all right, that was fun, bye, and just leave everything behind. But if you really look at his life and what we know, which isn't a whole lot, the only thing that really seemed to be a big problem was his marriage. And as we previously mentioned, he was also growing very paranoid. He was worried about being murdered. And so if you take a look at Tara's actions following his disappearance, I think most of us would be like, yeah, it's kind of sketchy. You know, she's pulling money that is his. She's also trying to disappear. What's going on there? So what is her end goal? Although there's no proof, there's some theories out there point to Carlos Castaneda, whom Jacobo despised by the end of his life, and Ter had wanted them to join his commune in Los Angeles. And we should do an entire episode on Carlos's cult because it is absolutely insane. And I'm not just saying that. It is fucking crazy. I had no idea about this. But also the dude's just a total fraud. So he's just the typical cult leader, total fraud, total manipulation, control, power over women situation going on. Because he had recruited at least six women whom he were convinced were witches to live with him in Los Angeles. And they would travel together, cut off all communication with their family, of course. And they were forced to have sex with him and other male members of the group. And in the spring of 1998, Carlos had grown gravely ill. And the witches looked at buying a vessel and firearms to carry out a suicide pact. However, instead of ending their lives, Carlos changed his will and left all of his royalties from his massively best-selling books. Dude sold 28 million books. That's insane. Like, wow.
He was rich as fuck by the end of his life.
So at this time period, there's like estimates he's absolutely a millionaire. He definitely had a lot of money. And he left all that money to his followers. But what's interesting is that the witches disappeared days after he passed away on April 27th, 1998. And then on May 2nd, 1998, the abandoned car of one of the witches, Patricia Parton, was found in Death Valley. And the vehicle wasn't abandoned on the side of the road like most, but it had been driven into the desert as if it had run out of gas, and the license plates were removed. The interior was extremely clean, and no purse was found nearby, but what appeared to be a bullet hole was spotted on the trunk. And in 2003, skeletal remains were found near where the car was abandoned, and 3 years later, they were identified as none other than Patricia Parton, and no cause of death was determined. One of the other witches, Kathleen Pullman, was spotted in 2024, but none of the others have been seen or heard from since. That's wild. Like, what is going on? Clearly, there was an exchange of funds
right
here, and then they just poof, they're gone. But then what happened to Patricia?
Well, and that's part of, again, like I was saying, there's this gigantic article written about it. Like the author was trying to find, and he was actually the one who found Kathleen Pullman. But there seemed to be, like, Patricia Parton had been kind of considered, like, there was a very strange makeup of the group, but she was considered like the baby and Carlos was the dad, even though she was a full grown woman and they also had sex with each other. So she was the most distraught following Carlos's death. And there were also rumors that she was the one who wanted to carry out the suicide pact. And so with all the, there's the, you know, the, what you can suspect is that all the other witches were like, oh, we can take his money and live really comfortable lives forever. But she still kind of believed in him as the spiritual leader, as her, you know, adopted dad. And didn't want to just like take all the money and run. Like, she wanted to still go about carrying out the suicide pact. So the rumor is that then they had her killed to keep her quiet about the, you know, massive
right.
funds
yeah.
that were being
wow.
exchanged. But again, no proof other than just like, that's what it seems like.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
So the theory is that Ter, Jacobo's wife, kind of like fell under Carlos's spell, became convinced of what he was doing and his cult essentially was doing. And when Jacobo was reluctant to join, she clearly wanted his assets to bring into the group with her. So is that potentially motive for her to have Jacobo disappear?
Right. And you know, I think even though, like, we know of at least those six witches, the six women who disappeared, one of them being Patricia Parton, we know of them, but we only know of them because of their family members were like, yep, they disappeared, they joined this guy, and we haven't seen them since. So there is certainly a possibility where there could have been more. There could have been more women who lived in this compound. I mean, it was extremely secretive.
Wow, that's so bizarre. Never even heard of this before. We'll have to look into it more. Sounds right up our alley. Huh. Pretty plausible. Carlos or somebody associated with Carlos may have gotten rid of Jacobo, potentially. But then there's another theory that states that Jacobo, having done far too many psychedelics throughout his studies, eventually suffered, you know, a mental break, psychosis, and then simply went to a rural location somewhere. And then, you know, that was the end for him, and he's just never been recovered. And that's another reason, you know, he kind of reminds me of Granger Taylor a little bit, because that's kind of the theory with him as well, is that his leaving the note behind was sort of a nice way for people to remember him, but ultimately he mentally just got to a point where there wasn't a point for him to continue on. And I could see that potentially being a possibility here with Jacobo. Or maybe it's a trip gone wrong. Maybe he did something that he thought would kind of push him through that barrier that he felt like was holding him back from finding the answers he was looking for, and it was too much. Or he mixed substances or something like that. Or he went to a location and, I mean, shit, something accidental could have happened in the middle of... There's a lot of very rural, expansive places in Mexico that you could just disappear. So another possibility for sure. The most hopeful and least likely theory, though, comes from what is called a quote-unquote political family, a member named Alon Stavins. Alon was related to Jacobo through his aunt Hilda, who was Jacobo's cousin. Alon is an academic in his own right, the professor of humanities and Latin American and Latino culture at Amherst College, and he's also a consultant to the Oxford English Dictionary. Writing a piece on his distant relative, Alon contacted another cousin of his who happened to be a necromancer and asked him to find out whether Jacobo was dead or alive. So similar interests run in the family, sounds like.
Well, what's interesting about Alon is that he starts out the article by basically saying, like, I only met Jacobo twice during, because he's also considerably younger, and, you know, they're distant relatives. Political family member is like, you know, we're family, but... You know, not really.
Okay.
But he always described Jacobo as being like a, you know, kind of a nut compared to him. Like he always thought like, but it wasn't until this paper that he actually looked into his studies and he was like, actually, he was kind of onto something. He was actually doing a lot of interesting work. And so he reached out to this necromancer who was in the family as well, just to be like, this is likely the way that Jacobo would have done it if he were alive. So I think that that's the interesting thing, is that even Jacobo's studies like could convince, you know, more or less serious academics of being like, oh, he was onto something.
Yeah.
He was onto
something. That's interesting. Well, the necromancer told Alon that after numerous seances and other rituals, they could not contact his spirit. So indicating that he hadn't all passed all the way to the other side. But he did say, quote, Dr. Greenberg is in Bardo, the Buddhist liminal state between death and rebirth. A fun theory for sure, but I think it's pretty clear, because the fact that Terror, his wife, disappears afterwards, takes money, and just is gone. Seen in Tijuana, you know. Just her actions after his disappearance, I think, speak volumes. I think it's the motive there being clearly their marriage was not in a good place. She was looking to move on from him, was looking to join Carlos, and needed funds to do so, and so try to make, you know, what better way to do that than just make him disappear. Interesting that they didn't really make, there's not like much info on what investigation was done, how hard they looked for him.
You know, it's there was an early piece by the journalist Sam Quinones, who did like actually speak to the leading Mexican investigator on this, and you know, they looked into it, but it's just like, the fact of the matter is he also pointed suspicion at Casaneda, but there just was nothing. Like there's just nothing
there. He literally vanished without a trace.
Right. And like, even if you wanted to look into Tare's actions, it's like, she also totally disappeared. Like there was an investigation. I'm not, cause it's only this one article by one journalist that reports on the investigation. But so there was one, we don't know how rigorous it was, but at the end of the day, it's still, it's like, what are they supposed to even look for?
Yeah, it's interesting that it there's not a whole lot of like knowledge around what was he doing when he wasn't working and researching, and like what does his home life look like? What does his personal life look like? You know, was he just kind of a mad scientist in a way? You know, just somebody so devoted to his work, his ideologies, that he just kind of lost touch in a way.
I think, I mean, you know, without saying like he was totally gone. I mean, I don't know how much free time. I mean, he wrote like over 30 books.
Yeah, that's wild.
He was an extremely busy man. And whether you agree with the scientific nature of his work or not. You know, I don't think he had much free time. I really think, you know, he was just constantly locked in. And if he wasn't locked in, he was at home, which eventually became a dangerous place for him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just so telling that he literally said, I'm afraid I'm going to be murdered, right. You know, something along those lines. And that to me says a lot. And he became paranoid. He was worried about people following him. It's difficult, right? Because, I mean, I'm sure the investigators were like, well, is that just a result of his, you know, psychedelic use? Or is that actually something happening to him? Like, he actually saw somebody following him, or he felt like there was genuine threats being made against his life. Because, I mean, I could see how they go look and start reading about his voyages to, you know, other star systems and meeting with aliens and stuff, that it, as an investigator, you'd be like, okay, this guy's just completely lost all grips with this reality that we're all in. And so who knows? But yeah, I don't know. I can't say for sure one way or another. I think the evidence, the circumstantial evidence here points to likely he was murdered and he disappeared that way. But I don't think you can fully rule out other possibilities as well, that maybe he just left. Maybe he felt like the only way to save himself is that I have to disappear. And he was willing to do that despite leaving his daughter behind, because in his mind, it's better that I'm alive than dead somewhere. And so maybe he did go off. I kind of hope, I hope for his sake that he went off and maybe lived out the rest of his life with some other people, other shamans or something like that, in a remote part of Mexico or somewhere else. But what a interesting story. If you're still here, if you're still here and listening, I hope you're not completely lost. But if you are, that's okay, because there's a lot to digest here. It's a lot to think about. What is reality? I don't know.
I don't either. I'm trying to piece
it. It's a question that we ask ourselves all the time. What is this? What am I doing sitting here right now for this microphone? Is this real? Or is this a simulation? Am I just simulating this through my brain and I'm not actually here?
What if I see colors that are different from the colors that you see? You ever get hit with that one?
I don't know, man. I need to like go sit and just think about this. I'm going to think about this on my drive home. There's a lot to unpack here, but what an interesting guy. Jacobo Greenberg. Big fan. Definitely.
Me too.
I mean, I wish does he have English translations of his work available?
That is actually a kind of a huge problem with why he's not so well known out here, is that certain, like some of his volumes on the shamans, like the Pachita one, there is an English translation. There's also an English translation of like his synergetic theory. But for the most part, most of his work is not in English. And that is one of the major issues as to why he's just not that well known out here these days.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I'd be interested to just read some of it, and just especially his volumes on shamanism. I mean, it sounds really interesting. I find shamanism to be fascinating, and feel like there's so much knowledge there that is beneficial to civilization and society. But yeah, let us know your thoughts. Let us know your thoughts on Mr. Greenberg. What do you think? What do you think happened to him? And if you want a little bit more of a head stumper, what is reality? Are we trapped in the matrix? Can we manipulate the matrix? Can we truly break free of our mind? Tell me. I want to hear it. Someone who has the answer, reach out. But that's it. That's it for us today. Thank you so much. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know. Hit that thumbs up. Hit that subscribe button. We really appreciate it. But we'll be back next week with another one, and Kendall will be back. I know you miss her. I miss her too. It feels incomplete recording without her, I'll be honest. It's nice having you guys though, instead of just like completely alone. This episode would have gone, who knows where I would be right now.
Yeah, you'd be.
I might be like in the corner crying and and like begging for this simulation to stop. But we'll see you guys next week. Till then, keep on taking your mind, baby, a mile higher. Peace.
luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.